Tonight, we're going to be taking a look at basically the Olivet Discourse, the Synoptic Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So if you have Bibles today, we'll be referring to that area of the New Testament. We also, I've handed out some papers tonight. One of them we will have an exercise later on, and then we have the PowerPoints that we have. We're going to begin to talk tonight, rushing towards the end times. And just to refresh your memory, there were three questions that the disciples asked Jesus during that afternoon on Mount Olives. And they asked the three things: when will these things happen, in reference to the destruction of the temple? And the second question was, what will be the sign of your coming kingdom? And the third one was, what is the sign of the end of the age of Gentile oppression? So the first thing that we're going to talk about is this time period that we know that after Jesus ended his ministry here on the earth, that we have this, and we indicate that in regards to his ministry ending, and that's at the time of the cross. When Jesus died on the cross and his resurrection and then his ascension into heaven, and just before, he had told his disciples, you know, that I'm leaving, but I'm going to come again. And during the Olivet Discourse, which was just a few days before he died on the cross, he had this long talk with them to explain things about why the temple was going to be destroyed and what to expect in the coming time, and then the Great Tribulation, his second coming, and those type of things. So Jesus died around 33 A.D. And the next event that he spoke of was the answer to the first question. And if you recall, the first question is, when will these things happen? Because and if you'll just turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 24, we'll take a look at that scripture real quickly. Matthew chapter 24. And when Jesus left the temple and was walking away, when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to the building, "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." And that was when he was in the temple that morning during worship. And then in the afternoon, he was sitting on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" There's three questions. One, when, and two, what's. So the first thing is, when will these things happen? Those stones being thrown down off each other is the destruction of the temple. Now, Who remembers what year the temple was destroyed? 70 A.D. So we're going to move over to 70 A.D. And this is, the temple was destroyed. By who was the one that destroyed it? Anybody recall what the Roman general's name was? Titus. Titus was the Roman general that was in charge of the siege and of Jerusalem and the Roman army that was to quell a rebellion. And in doing so, they destroyed the Jewish temple in 70 A.D. It was located in Jerusalem, of course. Okay, so already we can see that when will these things happen, the destruction of the temple occurred in less than 40 years after Jesus spoke to them. And so this prophecy was fulfilled that Jesus spoke. The second thing is where it talks about what will be the sign of your coming. He actually takes a long period of time to talk about that in the ensuing verses. And the what is the sign of the end of the age, he does speak to that a little bit as well. So when you take a look at this chart that we have here, it shows that there is this time period that is just before or between the destruction of the temple and Jesus' return to earth. There's a period of time. Jesus doesn't tell us how long that time is, but he says that there will be things that will happen and occur, and as you get closer to the day of his return, the things will even speed up faster. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But on the day that he returns, there will be a sign of his coming, because that is his coming. And this is the second question that he was going to answer. What are the signs of your coming? So that is, you know, all the way up to it. And then, when is the end of the age? And the end of the age is marked by when Jesus returns to the earth in that appearing. So How do we know it's you? And is that going to be the end of the age, or do we still have some expectation for something else yet to occur? And so this chart speaks to those two questions. Now, most people take a look at this part of the timeline is that when you talk about the end times, what is most in people's mind is what it means. The Great Tribulation and Armageddon. However, the Great Tribulation is just a small sliver of end times. The end times is everything from 70 AD at the destruction of the temple all the way until Jesus returns. And so I want, and this is part where people sometimes like, well, how soon is it going to be? How are we going to know that it's about to get here? And so because it's generally divided between the day of the Lord, the coming of the Lord, and the Great Tribulation, we kind of have this kind of look that it's this one event is end times. So we need to understand what is leading up to that Great Tribulation. And that's some of the things that Jesus talks at length in the Olivet Discourse. So I'm going to change to the next slide. Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, as we read, he says that, tell us, they said, when will this happen and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And this is how Jesus answered. Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. Okay? Now, his first thing that he says is a warning to not be deceived. And he said that many Christs will come, claiming to be him. Can you think of any instances that may have occurred that you know of?
Well,
okay, there's some recent things in our lifetime that you can point to where people have said, I am the Messiah, right? Okay. But there's also that goes all the way back. There is a revolt in Israel called the Bar Kokhba. That's B-A-R. And the second verse, second word is C-O-C-H-B-A. Bar Kokhba revolt. And that was where this gentleman named Bar Kokhba proclaimed himself to be Messiah. And he gathered a group of followers, and they were going to take back Israel from the Romans that had destroyed their temple. That was in, I believe, around 135 AD. So in each one of these instances that will proceed from this point, there are others that would proclaim to be Christ. Now, when we read in the New Testament, and Paul is talking about that there are others that were during that time that they were proclaiming to be something that they weren't, and he was referring to them as antichrists in the plural. So Bar Kokhba was one that was documented as being someone who proclaimed himself to be a Messiah. He was going to bring about a deliverance of Israel from Roman oppression to bring about an end to the age of oppression by Gentiles. That was his basis of, you know, of getting his platform of popularity. But in the end, he was, you know, his army was destroyed. He was killed, and they took all of the Israelites and moved them into. So the thing that happens is that there are some very significant descriptions of people who proclaimed themselves to be messiahs, and it brought about a historical note that is in the history books that you can reference and that type of thing. But it began very early towards where Christ, you know, had given his disciples his warning. Beyond that, there are many other instances where people have proclaimed to be Messiah. Not necessarily for the Jewish people, because after this point, when the Israelites were all distributed throughout the rest of the known world and there's hardly anyone left in Israel, then at the point when the church became at the forefront after Constantine and his follower Theodosius proclaimed that everyone was going to be, that Christianity was the national religion, it then became people inside the church or at a national level that inside Christianity, or quote-unquote Christianity, that said, I am the Messiah. I am a, you know, the one that is going to deliver the people into the next, you know, the next level. We have had, both in Europe, and a lot of them in Europe, but we've also had some in the United States. We had a reference to the Waco, Texas event with David Koresh. We have had Jonestown with, and I'm trying to remember what that gentleman was. Not that he was a gentleman. but there, and there has been horrible disasters with each one of these. In Europe, you will find Rasputin at points of time trying to proclaim himself to be, you know, this great mystic that was going to bring about some types of things. Hitler was talking about that he had been chosen to take the Germany into the Third Reich or the third millennium of a renewal of things so that he was going to deliver the German people from the oppression of the world and its type of thing. So this type of message and theme has ran throughout history. Also in our lifetime, within the last 40 years, Reverend Sun Yat-moon, there's also some esoteric people that are involved with the New Age movement that have claimed themselves to be messiahs. So all of those kinds of things are connected to it. Now, outside of Christianity and people that are trying to proclaim a messianic platform to gather their popularity and things, you also have things that are outside of Christianity, like in the Muslim world. They are actually looking for something called the Imam Mahdi. So that is another form of a messiah. In Buddhism, they also have someone that will lead them to a new level. So all of these spiritualistic kind of things that are going out throughout the world are not surprising, because Jesus says to be careful, because there will be people that will try and say that they are the Christ, that they are the true one, that Jesus was just another type of Messiah, but is not the real Messiah. I am. So that has been going on for 2 millennia. And it's continuing today. So that's the first thing that Jesus said. Then in verse 6, Jesus said, "You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come." So we have this long period of time that Jesus is talking about, because obviously he has not returned yet. And we have these wars, rumors of wars. And we also have, in another translation, it says revolutions. We can definitely, point to the revolutions that have occurred in Europe. The French Revolution, the Communist Revolution, the German Revolution, even though that was under Nazism, but you can tell that it's the same type of thing. We've had revolutions in China, in Japan. In India have had multiple. Africa has had multiple revolutions. The Boer Wars, the Boxer Rebellion are two examples of things that have occurred in the past. We still have revolutions. The Iranian Revolution during the 1970s that resulted in the American hostage situation during Jimmy Carter's administration with the Ayatollah Khomeini. All of these kinds of things have been evidenced all the way through. So we have this huge chunk of wars that happen. And in these wars, it has made some major shifts and changes with who is ruling, and it creates other types of nationalistic fervor, ethnicity issues, ethnic cleansing, genocide. We've heard of those not only throughout Europe with trying to eliminate the Jews from the earliest times, but we also have it occurring with other ethnic groups like the Serbians during the Yugoslav breakup about 20 years ago, somewhere in the last 20 years. And we also have the ethnic cleansing that has happened in Africa. And there has been a recent one with the Kurds in the Middle East with the Iraqi ISIL thing that's going on. So we have a lot of issues with wars and rumors of wars that have continued. But Jesus said, don't be alarmed. These things must happen, but the end is still yet to come. So we know that, okay, we're going through all of these things, wars and rumors of wars. If you recall when we talked a few weeks back about the Great War to end all wars, World War I, and where people's minds were at, that things were just going to get better and better, and we're about to have, their missionary fervor is just incredible right now in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And so therefore, we are going to, we're going to have heaven really soon, just right around the corner. And then the Great War of World War I broke out in Europe, and it just devastated the European continent with millions of people dying, soldiers dying. Disease was horrible, killed probably more than the fighting itself. There was a horrible type of war that occurred because it was the first time men began to use chemicals against each other, and not like face-to-face men fighting, but it was rather something far more insidious and evil. It disillusioned people. And Jesus is saying, not only don't be alarmed, that these things must happen, but it shocked the consciousness of people and their sense of what's right and wrong, and it became very disillusioned. And then to follow that with a Great Depression in the European continent, where people could hardly keep their estates together, or the cities were so damaged that it was really bad economically for everyone. But in particular in Germany, the war debt was very, very, very heavy. Because the Germans had declared war on all of these other countries, they had to make reparations, and they were fined by the International Court of Law to have these very heavy fines. They were not allowed to have their own army, so they were left unprotected. And so there was, I think it was, the unemployment rate was like in the 80 percentile or something. There was hardly any food for people to eat. And that vacuum of leadership and the vacuum of being able to have dignity, to be so hated by the rest of your neighboring nations, it made the atmosphere very ripe for Hitler to make his rise very quickly to popularity, and then with his own personal disillusionment in thinking he was a messiah to bring the Third Reich into the next level for Germany, allowed him to create World War II. These two very large wars that were fought on a multi-country, multi-continent level gave a rise to the amount of increase there is to the wars. So what I kind of want to demonstrate to you is that something that we call, that you may have heard this word before, is called velocity. Velocity is the increase in quantity and those events coming closer and closer together. So if you were to make a graph so that it starts at 0 and it's going to go to 100, the velocity of each event may take, and we'll put these in 10-year increments. The first event may take 10 years. The second one takes 5 years. The next one and the next one until they get, till they're right on top of each other, to where the velocity is that these events are coming faster and faster, but they are also increasing in intensity. We have certainly seen that from going from wars that were like the Bar Kokhba revolt, where the Roman army is suppressing a small band of rebels, to world wars that we've had in the century just passed, two great world wars, and we've had multiple times where we've had skirmishes throughout our century that we just passed. We are currently still at war throughout the world, and it is multi-countries against an entity, like in the ISIL area. Russia, Great Britain, the U.S., France, many of the UN nations are trying to contain this, the Turkish, and there's other people that are just involved from a sideline, supplying things like Iran, supplying arms and money and stuff. So Jesus is trying to let us know that this is, you know, something that's going to happen. Don't get alarmed. It's going to get worse. It has to happen. In verse 7, it says, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. Famines and earthquakes. This is another level of something that we have that comes in at this point. So the next major thing is famine, earthquakes. Okay. Recently, I understood from one of the geophysicists that the amount of earthquakes that have usually come, you know, it, just in the ring of fire that we see, which circumference of basically of the Pacific Ocean is ringed by every landmass that touches it, that there is an area of earthquake and volcanic activity. So that's why they call it the Ring of Fire. In the Ring of Fire, normally in the past, like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you look at the statistics, you'll see that there's always earthquakes. It might be a Richter scale 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. The ones that are in the 1, 2, and 3, there are literally perhaps 100 in California at level 1. But as you go up, they get fewer and fewer. So that by the time you get to a 5, there's probably only, you know, one or two every 5 to 10 years. However, that's not the case anymore. In fact, the things that are at the level of 5, 6, and 7, well, especially 5, 4 through 6, we have had a 300% increase in just the past 5 years in earthquake activity. So here's where we're talking about velocity. Things are coming faster and faster, but the intensity is also increasing. Since 2004, we have had more earthquakes above a 6.5 level than we have had in the past 30 or 40 years. Like the earthquake of 8.5 that occurred off the coast of Sumatra in 2004 that caused 320,000 people to die. The Honshu earthquake in Japan created over 100 earthquakes in California across the ocean, the Pacific Ocean is what I was looking for. So it caused, you know, all of these other additional earthquakes because, not to get too technical, but what's under the ground is all these rocks that are jammed up against each other. And when one breaks loose, it causes an earthquake. And well, that causes strain and pressure on another point. And as that point shifts because it gets too much pressure, it releases its energy and you have another earthquake. That can also cause reactions with volcanoes when they're erupting their lava and stuff. So we have earthquakes and famines. The famine in Africa that has been ongoing for a very long time in the southern half of Africa has increased dramatically over the past 60 years. There was also a famine that occurred in Australia, which most people were not aware of, that happened about 5 or 6 years ago. And it was a very serious one where they thought that it was going to seriously damage the Australian people. So there are famines that are occurring because of lack of rain, and that famine, therefore, you don't have the food. So those are important things to remember. But the eighth verse is what is kind of the key that Jesus was wanting to us to know. All these are the beginning of birth pain. Now, for some of you who are not female and have had children, just to let you know that when a woman goes into labor, it starts with something that feels pretty intense, but the intensity gets worse until you get to transition. But during that time, your birth pains may be 10 minutes apart, 15 minutes apart, but then they're going to get down to, you know, 8 to 12 minutes apart, 6 minutes apart, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. And as they increase and they're coming faster and faster, they're coming closer together, they're also increasing in intensity. And so Jesus was trying to describe velocity and intensity so that we could understand from a very practical point that wars and rumors of wars, famine and earthquakes, and people saying that they are the Messiah is going to increase a lot. And they're going to come close together. And you're going to be having to deal with this. But he said, don't panic. Don't become alarmed. This is just the beginning. If the beginning of birth pains, when it's light and easy, quote unquote, for wars and rumors of wars and famines and earthquakes, what is it going to be like at the time when the birth pains are 30 seconds apart and they're on top of each other, they're lasting for 90 seconds apiece, which is what happens around, you know, transition time, just before the birth of the baby. Now, what Jesus was trying to give us a word picture of is, my coming is going to be like these long, slow, you know, birth pains that come, then they're going to get a little worse, and then they're going to get a little bit more. They're going to get harder, they're going to get faster together. And when they get really, really, really bad, and you think, let me out of here, I don't want to do this, find a zipper, you know, whatever it is, that's just before the baby is born. Well, that's when Jesus returns. Is we have to have all of this velocity and intensity to precede his return. So, in the next slide, we'll take a real quick look at Mark 13:3, which is the same area. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, and John, Andrew, asked him privately, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign that they are all about to be fulfilled?" Jesus said, "Watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name, claiming I am he, and will deceive many." So what it is being said is that it isn't just that there's going to be messiahs, but they're going to actually deceive people. And Jesus says, "When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come." Now notice he uses the word, "when you hear of wars and rumors of wars." That indicates that you may not be a person that is affected or in the middle of one of these wars that occur. Certainly here in the United States, we have not had an attack on our soil from a standing nation's army since about 1812. Or if you want to consider the Mexican army with Texas, which wasn't a state for us at the time, in the 1840s. But what we have from those earliest times in the 1800s, we were not attacked by another nation until 1942 with Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. So we've had an extended length of time of peace. And since 1942, when Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese Air Force and Navy, we haven't had anything since. And that's you know, another long period of time. However, we have heard of many wars and rumors of war throughout the world. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of birth pains. In Luke 21:7, it follows the same type of thing. In particular, verse 9 says, "When you hear of wars and revolutions, do not be frightened. These things must happen first, but the end will not come right away." And he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, famines, and pestilences." So at this point, we add pestilence to this list. Okay, now pestilence is a disease. You can consider anything like dengue fever, Spanish influenza that happened right after World War I, and during Ebola virus, West Nile virus, you know, all of these types of things that have come on the nations. You could also consider things like HIV, hepatitis C and D, all of these type of things that have come to us. Those are pestilence. Obviously, during the Dark Ages, when they experienced the Black Death and the bubonic plague and those other types of plagues that occurred with cholera, yellow fever, which devastated large chunks of population in Europe and the United States, Africa, malaria, you know, all of these type of diseases that have come on mankind. Some were not even known prior to the 20th century. So we can add pestilence at this point. And Jesus says, "In famines and pestilences in various places, and fearful events, and great signs from heaven." For a long, long period, we've never heard of the thing of meteors coming close to the earth. And we've had several flybys that are closer than we would feel comfortable, especially the folks at NASA keep us appraised of, you know, we've got a meteor that's coming, it's going to pass by within, 90,000 miles, but let's say, but, you know, we've not had those before that we know of. And so, but large meteors, and it's not just the small little meteorites that we have seen throughout history, but There has been some major ones. During the early 1900s, there was a meteor that hit, that struck in Russia and wiped out a third of Siberia's landscape. There was another large meteor that fell in that area within the past 3 years. We've had many of these types of events that have occurred, and they are occurring with frequency at a greater rate now. So we've got those great signs that we have to add. So this is now a new item that we have called Great Signs in Heaven. Okay? Great Signs in the Heavens. So Jesus is trying to express to his people that he's talking to the three or four disciples what things are going to happen. So let's read on from verse 8. We'll start in verse 9. Because he said, these are just the beginning of birth pains. And then he begins in verse 9. Then, when the beginnings are happening, now this is what will happen next. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. So now we have this next big section that comes in of what Jesus says. Okay, after this is all the start of birth pains. In other words, the start of the end. This is the start of the end. It's not the end. It's just the start of it. And by the way, even though we have talked about all the things that have happened, he's talking about these things are happening back in 40, 50, 60, and 70 AD. That's his reference point to his disciples. Is during this time period, all of these things of great signs in the heavens, famine, earthquakes, and pestilence, wars, and rumors of wars, and false messiahs, were all things that were going to occur. Now, Jesus is talking just a few days before Palm Sunday. On the day of the crucifixion, Good Friday, if you recall, there was an event that happened in the skies. What was it? The sky went dark for a long period of time. For as Jesus hung on the cross until he died, it was completely dark. What happened at the moment he died on the cross? There was an earthquake. So we have, you know, Jesus is saying, guys, don't worry about it. There's going to be things that's going to happen. You're going to have earthquakes and great signs in the heaven. You know, an unusual darkness in the middle of the day only in Jerusalem. It wasn't a widespread, like a solar eclipse. There wasn't one. It's just over the place of Jerusalem where the darkness occurred. And everyone saw it. It was recorded, but there was no solar eclipse. So why did the sun go out? Oh, is it a big thundercloud? No. Because if it was a big thundercloud, they would have said there was rain. They would have, you know, recorded something else to the effect. No, it was something that was unusual. In fact, it was a darkness that was so dark, you could hardly see your hand in front of your face. So this is when Jesus is talking way back here. These are signs we're going to see. But one of the things to remember is a birth pain is that when a woman has a contraction, the contractions are the same. And what I mean by that is, there's still a contraction. The muscles of the stomach and the uterus all begin to compress and tighten. These are the contractions. Wars and rumors of wars, famine, earthquake, pestilence, and great signs in the heavens. Those are all contractions. They are a pressure. They are an intensifying of feelings. And, you know, but as they begin, that's the same thing that happens just before transition in a woman. Is that those contractions just get tighter, they get harder, they get more intense, and they get closer together. But it's still a contraction. So Jesus is saying, we're going to have all that stuff back here. And they did indeed have famines and pestilence, all kinds of things back here. But that's going to continue all the way through time until he returns. It's just the intensity and the velocity that they come in. So to continue on, he says that the second thing that will happen to you is that you're going to be persecuted and put to death, hated by all nations because of me. And of course, when we take a look at what happened under the Romans, that Christianity was an aberrant aberration to them. It wasn't a legal religion, and therefore everyone that was practicing this new religion of Christianity should be executed or persecuted. They should be sold as slaves. They should be, all kinds of things. So the Romans arrested the Christians. They persecuted them. They tortured them. They killed them in the arena by having them torn apart by wild animals, boiling them in oil. Some horrible, horrible things were done to the early Christians. So Jesus is saying, these things are going to happen. And guess what? That will continue to happen to the end. And even today, if you are a Christian that is caught in a Muslim country that is intolerant of Christianity, in particular what's going on right now in the Middle East with ISIL, or ISIS, whichever you wish to call it, where they are beheading men, women, and even infants. They are torturing them. They're doing all kinds of horrifying things, raping the women, even young girls. So it's a really, really bad thing. Why? Because you're a Christian and we hate you and we want to eliminate you from the face of the earth. So those things are still going on today. If you're a Christian in China, Myanmar, Malaysia, and some of the other Muslim or at North Korea, some of those that are atheistic countries are the same way in regards to Christians and the persecution. So now we have persecution. So things are going to get a little more intense. So we have persecution, we have arrest, death. Okay, all of these things are coming in at this point. People will fall away from the faith. So we find people falling away from the faith. Faithless people, betraying. We certainly see at this point in our existence here in the United States a huge decrease in the amount of people that are coming to church and are saying that they are Christian, but they don't come to church. They don't engage in Christian life and Christian walk. So that's something that Jesus said is going to come. We had spoken earlier about false Christ. Well, false prophets are the same type of thing, where they proclaim that they are the prophet of the end. I am the new Elijah. And we have had some examples of that have happened here recently within the last 5 years in the United States, where they have proclaimed themselves to be the prophet of God. People proclaiming to be modern day apostles and portraying themselves as to being something that is slightly not what we understand from scripture. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of many will grow cold. And there certainly is with an increase of immorality and those type of things throughout the world that, people are getting, cold. But Jesus said in verse 13, "But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." Certainly right now that we're getting closer and closer each year with the amount of countries or languages that the gospel is being presented in their own native tongue so that they can understand the message of the gospel. So we have something that's really positive here. We've had a lot of ugly stuff, but now we've got the gospel being preached. So this is the one positive thing from this list that is a really good thing. And it says, this is what's just before the end, because now comes the end. So we had to have all of these things starting to come up. At this point, Jesus takes a break. And he begins, he's saying, all of these things are the beginning of birth pains. And then you have this period of things that occur. The arrest, the persecution, the death, the faithless, the betrayal. All of those things from that list. The false prophets, deceiving of people, the increase of wickedness. So all of that is occurring here. This is the next section. But by the end, the gospel is going to be preached. And when it's in all nations, that's when now the end can come. So Jesus takes a little break here. And he begins in verse 15 to talk about something that is within from what occurred in 33 A.D., up to here that says the end. Now Jesus is going to take a little break and explain something called what we are going to term as the Great Tribulation. And he begins in verse 15 by saying, "So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. no one on the roof go to his house, go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath. For then, and this is verse 21, we picks it up again. For then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles, and to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. So, in this section, Jesus is saying, okay, we're now going to have this time of great distress. And I believe in the King James it says, great tribulation. So this is going to be a time where there's going to be a lot of horrible, intensified things from the past. And he identifies, you know, a few of those things in that. And he's given a warning that, you know, the sign that it is beginning, or that there is some event inside that is of extreme danger, is when the abomination of desolation appears on the, when he's standing in the holy place, or on the wing of the temple. Depends on which book we're going to look at on those words. But in Matthew, it says, when you see standing in the holy place, referring to the temple. So this is important. When you see the abomination of desolation that is standing in the holy place. Now, from a preterist standpoint and a historicist standpoint, that event occurred in 164 BC when Antiochus Epiphanes IV stood physically in the holy place of the temple and sacrificed a pig on the altar to his image of Zeus, or Jupiter, the king of the Greek gods. That event occurs back here. But what does Jesus say in this verse? Well, what tense is the grammar? When you see, it's a future tense. So if Jesus himself believed that Antiochus Epiphanes was the fulfillment of Daniel, the prophet's prophecy from 605 BC that was going to happen in 164 BC, but Jesus is using a future tense in his grammar, do you think he made a mistake? No. He used the future tense because it's something yet to happen. Now, from a historical standpoint, if these are the literal words of Jesus, says, when you see standing in the holy place, this is a prophecy that must be fulfilled exactly. Because thus saith the Lord, and he is the Lord. And so Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, did that occur in 70 AD? No, it did not. Titus himself was about 2 miles away when they broke through, and his generals and soldiers all rushed in, and they set fire to the temple before anybody could have done something like that. So the temple, holy place, did not have that event occur in 70 AD, but the temple was destroyed. So if Jesus is saying, when you see standing in the holy place, the abomination that causes desolation, it's a future event. And if the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, where is this abomination of desolation standing? There is only one holy place, and there's only one holy of holies, and that's in God's temple. Do we have that standing today? No, we don't. So this is, in fact, a future event that must be fulfilled because Jesus said it is in the future, that this abomination of desolation must stand in the holy place where everyone can see, so that it is a fulfillment of his words. And we know that Jesus is not a man that he should lie, correct? So we have to take that at some point during the Great Tribulation, we have a temple. So there has to be a temple during the Great Tribulation. We don't have a temple in Israel on the Temple Mount. It is not in the same place that Solomon's temple was built, or that the second temple was built under Ezra that was remodeled by Herod the Great. So we still have yet to see the fulfillment of this prophecy from Jesus' own mouth that we need a temple. Because we need a temple so that we can find this ugly abomination of desolation standing in its holy place. And then Jesus begins to talk after that verse 16, 15 and 16, excuse me. He begins to tell them about the warning. Don't go back for your coat. Don't go down and take anything out of your house. Don't run out in the field and go get something. Just get out of Jerusalem. And, you know, and he says, you know, it's going to be really bad for women that are pregnant. Or if it's wintertime, Jesus does not even say when this is going to occur. He doesn't even give them a season of the year to understand this. But he's telling them to be awake, to be alert, and to understand. Because even when he said, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. He wants us to understand what Daniel was trying to say. So this is the greatest reference that we have to an Old Testament picture that had a large amount of text for us to read about, understand. And the disciples were already familiar with it, but Jesus is referring them back. Hey guys, heads up. You remember the stuff that Daniel wrote? You need to freshen up your remembrance, because you need to understand exactly everything that he wrote, because it's important, because it has to do with what's coming. So Jesus, in verse 21, he says, there will be great, and at that point, when this occurs, when the abomination of desolation stands in the holy place, that from that point forward, there's going to be great distress. So at this point, it's going to intensify even more than it already has. Because already, he says, up to this point, it's going to be pretty bad all the way to here. So at the end that's coming, this is occurring right at this point, just before the very end. So it's like the Great Tribulation occurs just an itty-bitty bit before the end. Now, if you read in Daniel, you'll probably find that it talks about the 70 weeks, and the 70th week is 7 years, because it's 7 days, so the tribulation period is described, and we'll get there in detail in the future. But he also says that at this point, not only is there going to be great distress, there's going to be more false prophets. And he also said that there's going to be false Christs, and there's going to be signs and miracles. So this false Christ, or the Antichrist, he's used it in the plural, so it's many people that are going to proclaim to be that Messiah that people are looking for. So the Antichrist and the false prophets are going to do miracles. And because they're going to say that it was Jesus, or it was a Messiah, it was the Christ that performed these miracles, people are going to think that, oh, this is really real. Look, I saw somebody that was lame, and they can walk now. I saw somebody that was blind, and they can see now. Oh, I saw him raise somebody up in his name from the out of a coffin, and this person is around and walking. This must be the Christ that I've been waiting for. This is my Savior. And that's the way they're going to look at these false Christs and false prophets, because they're going to perform things that look like legitimate miracles that we associate with God, because it's all done falsely and under the power of the enemy, Satan. But Jesus says, that is not going to deter and deceive my elect. He says, you know, they are going to perform these signs in order to deceive even the elect. That's their goal. I want to deceive as many Christians as I possibly can. But Jesus says, if that were even possible, the elect know his voice. My sheep hear my voice. They know that I'm their master. They're not going to be deceived. But he's given us warnings. You know, just pay attention and make certain that you're not deceived. Be really, really careful when you see something that you find out, is it really from me and my Father, or is it from our enemy, Satan?
Well, also right there, here, sometimes everybody's going to know when it comes. So it's not going to pop up somewhere in this country or this state.
Exactly. And that's what, in verse 26, it follows on. So if anyone tells you, there he is out in the desert, don't go out. Or if they say, here he is in the inner rooms, don't believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Okay. Now, Jesus has now answered question number two. What will be the sign of your coming? It'll be like the lightning is from the east to the west. Every eye will see. Every ear will hear. Everyone will see his coming. There won't be anything where you have to go hunt him down and figure out where he's at. So we now have answer number two. All of the stuff that he's given us is from a general perspective of all the troubles that we're going to go through throughout centuries, throughout millennia. up into the very end where we've got this big, ugly, great tribulation that's yet coming. But Jesus says the gospel's going to be preached. The elect are not going to be deceived. And he's also said, here's the sign that we are now at the end. I am appearing. That's the end of the age. So he's answered, in his my appearing, my coming, is also the end of the age. And just quickly, verse 28. When Jesus goes through all of that and he gets to this verse 28, wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. And this is my interpretation of that particular verse, because it kind of sticks out kind of odd, doesn't it? After he's just talking about, I'm making my great and glorious appearing, and then he says, where the vultures, where there's a carcass, the vultures will gather. If you recall a few verses earlier, Jesus said, the love of many will grow cold. A Christian that is not alive in Jesus, that is not on fire for Jesus, what do we think of them as? Dead. So wherever there is a carcass, dead Christians, spiritually dead Christians, there the vultures, the false Christ, the false prophets, they will gather. Wherever you find a loss of fervency and vibrancy for a Christian walk in life, there you will find, in that vacuum of the power of Jesus and the power of God in their lives, you will find the enemy seeking whom he can devour, to kill, steal, and destroy. Just like a lion, just like a vulture, you know, a big old buzzard who's going to look for a way that he can dine on the flesh and bones of a dead, spiritually dead Christian. That's an important point that a lot of people overlook. It's because as we get closer and closer to the end, if you don't stand firm for living a strong life of Christ, if you are not empowered by his protection of you, that doesn't mean that you're going to get off scot-free for anything, but that you know that Jesus has your back and that he is helping you through everything and that he is going to be there for you. If you start waffling on that and feeling like, Jesus never did anything for me, or you get to thinking, well, Jesus, what did you do for me lately? You know, those kind of attitudes show that there has been a spiritual dying inside. But if you keep that strong and powerful and alive within you, you keep that fire within you, then you will be able to stand firm all the way to the very end. Now, that's an important part that Jesus says, and I'm just going to take you back to it, where Jesus said in verse 13, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And, you know, if the end is when Jesus returns, the tribulation happens before, we're talking about a pre-millennial, post-tribulation event of the second coming of Christ. That's what Jesus is speaking of. Now, if Jesus comes back here, and I have to stand firm to the end, that means I'm going through the tribulation. I have to persevere, and I've got to exhibit self-control and faith and a strong sense of obedience to Jesus and what he's trying to say, because I understand I have to be prepared for everything. And this is the important part of us understanding, what is God's plan and purpose for me today in regards to end time? Where is my Christian life? Where is my Christian walk? Where is the fire inside of me? Where is my love of Christ? Where is my love for the gospel and the words of Jesus? Am I grasping a hold of that and feeding my heart, soul, and mind with Jesus to be the strongest and most powerful Christian that I can be for God, because I'm going to need it? And not only am I going to need it just to make it through this, that's not really the mindset. It's not just to squeak to the end, but it's actually the imagery is for someone to stand firm. That's like someone who's taken dominion, someone who is fighting, someone who is flexing their spiritual muscles to fight against the enemy in intercessory prayer, in speaking the word, in evangelizing, witnessing to others. So I ask you to think and look inside yourself. Where am I at in God's plan and purpose for me in the end time? We'll stop there for tonight.